And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, welcome back. Another week that I think Donald Trump was wishing wouldn't have existed. Another 1.5 million people lost their jobs, all mostly attributable to his failure in being able to cope with the coronavirus. We're now up to about 43 million people who lost their jobs because of this and caused the necessary expenditure of $2 trillion to try to make up for it. And although some people are going back to work in some places, nonetheless, more people are still getting laid off. And before everybody goes back to work, you got to have to open up at least 43 million jobs. We have a spike in new cases in 20-some-odd states, despite the fact that the Trump people are now saying that the whole thing is passed. We don't have to pay any attention to it. We have record case levels, record losses in 10 states, and we're up to 117,000 people dead from a virus, most of whom the authorities, the medical science authorities say up to 90% of those deaths could have been avoided had Trump acted as he was told to act, but which he didn't want to do. So that's the week that we're in, and it's a week in which the Bolton book has come out, a week in which the Southern District of New York, the head of the New York of the attorney's office, the attorney general's office, they're trying to fire him. He won't go. He's investigating Rudy Giuliani. The polls for Trump continue terrible. Summertime blues, no?
Yes. Ain't no cure for the summertime blues. At least Trump hasn't found a cure. He's hoping he found a cure. He's back. I mentioned last week, his cure seems to be road trip. And apparently some of his advisors thought that they had to get him out of the White House and get him on the road to rally his forces. So he picked that he would start in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of all places. First of all, it's a state where he doesn't have to worry about his reelection chances. But Tulsa, of course, had particular meaning to the African-American community because it was the site of the largest, if I could borrow a term, pogrom in American history, where 100 years ago, or 99 years ago, actually, an entire middle-class neighborhood of African-Americans was wiped out by rioters and thugs and white supremacists. When I say wiped out, people were murdered on the street. People were, their homes were burned and looted and whatever. And the community was never able to recover. And there was a cover-up of this thing. A fellow named Brent Staples wrote an eye-opening op-ed in the New York Times the other day. And he talked about this and what some of the survivors eventually talked about, but they still wouldn't, even decades after the fact, when they talked about what they saw, and they saw black men being dragged down the street in the back of pickup, on ropes, dragged from the back of pickup trucks and cars, that they still wouldn't identify the perpetrators of these things. So,
and let me ask you this: growing up, going to school, I was never taught a single thing about this Tulsa massacre. Never heard of it. Did you ever hear of it in school?
I never heard of it until a couple of years ago. Had no idea. No idea that it had ever happened. It was one of the great cover-ups. The newspapers shut down. They took the bodies out, and they nobody knows exactly what was done with them. They think some were put in mass graves, and there's actually... someone thought that they may have uncovered a mass grave recently. Some they think were just thrown in the river. Some they think were burned. Bodies were just cremated in piles. But in this article, they talked about truckloads of people or dead people in the back of these trucks being hauled out of town as if this thing never occurred. It's that parallel American history that you never know about.
I never heard of the overthrow of the Wilmington, North Carolina government in 1899.
No.
Where a bunch of racists just marched in because they didn't like the results of the election and burnt down the black neighborhood of Wilmington, North Carolina, arrested everybody they could, including the black chief of police, and ran them all out of town and established a white government. It was one of the few coups outside the Civil War, one of the few coups and successful coups in American history. I never heard of it.
Yeah. And of course, we know that down south, there was that great attempt to reframe American history into the fact, or at least Southern American history, that they didn't really lose the war, that the lost cause was a noble cause, and deserved to be represented by the heroes who fought for this lost cause, the people on Stashoots, the Confederate generals and soldiers who fought in order to preserve slavery and what have you. I think I mentioned I knew somebody in high school that had been grown up in South Carolina and was taught that it was the War of Northern Aggression.
There are continuing demonstrations throughout the nation. No wonder that hundreds and hundreds of cities, including places that you can't imagine would have anti-racist demonstrations, are having anti-racist demonstrations. No wonder Juneteenth has suddenly been pointed to as something that we got to pay attention to. Although, what it really commemorates is the fact that for 30 months, the enslavers in Texas were able to keep the knowledge of the Emancipation Proclamation from being learned about by the enslaved people in Texas, right? Because it commemorates when the Union Army finally was able to reach the Texas people to tell them they were no longer slaves.
Because the Emancipation Proclamation was on New Year's Day in 1863, and nobody knew about it in Texas, or at least the black people never knew about it until June 19th of 1865. But this goes back to a common theme, which is the cover-up of information that they don't want certain people to know about. And it's cover-up of things that run against the law or run against the grain of what America stands for. And we keep seeing this, particularly with the Trump administration, in trying to gain control of the media, of blasting the media, anything that's said about him or against him that in any way throws a bad light is immediately labeled fake news. He's been talking about the enemy of the people, and he's incessant about this. He never changes. And the sad part is, of course, that his enablers, his collaborators, go along with this, particularly in the U.S. Senate. I don't know if I mentioned last week an article by Ann Applebaum. Actually, she's written a book about it, but it's in The Atlantic from a couple of weeks back. At least part of it was excerpted. And she talks about the collaborator mentality and how people can go along with these things, people who know better and who know right from wrong and what their thought processes are and how they always fall victim to it and only wind up enabling things further. We had an instance late in the week on Friday night, the news dump. That is going to play out very, very interestingly with the Justice Department in New York City, the Southern District, where all of a sudden, late Friday night, Bill Barr releases a news item saying that the U.S. attorney there, Jeffrey Berman, who was former partner of Rudy Giuliani but is now investigating Rudy Giuliani, that he was resigning. And a couple hours, and was going to be replaced by a Trump toady who's now the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission out of he's from New Jersey, and he's never been a prosecutor before.
This is a job that's never been held by anybody who has not had experience as a prosecutor, right?
Right, right. And all of a sudden, Berman comes out and says, I'm not going anywhere, folks. You can't fire me. There's some reports that they try to bribe him first, and they offered him the head of the civil division or something like that. But Berman wanted to stay put. Apparently, they've got some ongoing investigations You know, they put Michael Cohen in jail, a Trump associate, but the rumors are that they're going after Rudy Giuliani himself for his activities involving the Ukraine or money or whatever, or with Lev Parnas and those folks. But anyhow, Berman is in a very interesting position because he was never given to the Senate for confirmation. So he was only an interim appointment. And that appointment ran out, but then he was reappointed by a panel of judges. So he's a judicial appointment right now, not a presidential appointment. And his claim is the president has no authority to fire me or to replace me. The only way I can be replaced is if the president nominates someone and the Senate fully confirms that person. And he said, in that case, I will step aside. But until then, there's not a legitimate replacement for me. So we're going to have
just another example of the Trump gang's incompetence.
Right.
I mean, they're not incompetent at passing regulations that gut the environment, that gut the rights of students, that gut the rights of working people generally. That they know how to do. But in terms of running their administration, that they don't know how to do, and they fall afoul of things all the time.
Well,
most of the court cases they've lost on policy matters haven't touched the policy.
They've decided
on their procedural errors.
That's what happened this week with the DACA case, where the Chief Justice wrote the majority opinion and saying, it's not that the president can't do this, but he's got to do it in the right way. And he didn't. His reasoning falls well short of what the law requires. The sad part, of course, is that four of the conservative judges would have let him get away with this.
Which just shows that they haven't got the slightest allegiance to the principles they claim motivate them.
Yeah.
there was another case, the case that extended federal protection against discrimination to the entire transgender community.
Right.
Right? That was a very
important
case.
Well, the LGBT community.
Yeah.
Not just transgender, but the whole community. And the interesting part about that was, one, that Roberts joined the opinion, but number two, it was written by Justice Gorsuch, who was a Trump appointee. And it brought out this conflict of judicial philosophy about things that really were never fully acknowledged as being legitimate ways of looking at things, but have popped up in the past 30 or 40 years, thanks to the Federalist Society and people like Robert Bork, you know, originalism and textualism, and whether you look at things the way that the people who passed the law were looking at it, or whether you have to modernize it. I call it the difference between a living constitution and the dead constitution society. You know, it's interesting, the originalists or the textualists, if they had their way, then the Second Amendment wouldn't allow anything besides flintlocks and those old pistols that they used to have. You couldn't have AK-47s or modern riflery because that wasn't contemplated by the founders. Cruel and unusual punishment. You couldn't have an electric chair because certainly that wasn't contemplated as being a way of punishing people in the old days. You could just have either a firing squad or hanging as a means of execution.
But this is also an interesting distinction between originalists and textualists, because Gorsuch's ruling, Gorsuch's argument is, I think, a very dangerous argument. It's true that in this particular case, it produced a result that a lot of progressive people support. But the argument that he used to get there is extremely dangerous. His argument is, it doesn't matter what the Congress that passed this law intended. What matters is what the words in the law say, what they wrote. That's what counts. Well, to me, that argument is democracy is irrelevant. If you happen to draft something that reads a certain way, that's what it is, even though you don't think you did that. I don't see why that's a good, you know, I wouldn't celebrate that kind of reasoning. I would say that's terrible.
So. Well, and we're going to have to see how, because the liberals went along with this. And it was
because they got the result they wanted. But
yeah.
A results-oriented decision, I don't think, is ever a good decision.
And we're going to we'll just have to see how it plays out, you know, and with the majorities. But it, but again,
talking
it was
about what's written, Bolton, John Bolton wrote a book, and Trump, who can't read anyway, doesn't want anybody to read it. He went to court, right?
Called prior restraint.
Prior restraint.
Which doesn't have a very long history of being successful in America, and it doesn't look like it was going to be successful with the judge. Now, there are consequences. Bolton may, because there is precedent, that if he didn't get the proper clearance, that he may not be able to profit from his book. And that's what they're trying to do as well. But this thing has to play out. The interesting part, of course, is that he passed the security clearance, at least the first level, and now they're trying to say, well, this, you know, retroactively, that there are other classified situations that preclude you from disclosing this in the book.
Well, but that's exactly the trick they pulled with Hillary Clinton when they investigated the use of her use of the email servers and said it's true that when you did what you did, it was perfectly legal to do it. But since then, we've changed the law, and you didn't comply with the changed law, the law that didn't exist when you did what you did. Now, that's a very interesting argument.
Yeah, but there's another conundrum, and that in order to use the classified information card, you have to admit that what Bolton did was true.
That's true. That's true. Because what he says was true.
Because if it wasn't true, then it's not passing on classified information, because the information wouldn't have been true.
And I think that Mark Meadows was asked this week, the new chief of staff, if the stuff isn't true, how did he violate the classified information rule? And he didn't answer, because actually there is no answer.
Yeah. And we really should talk about some of the things that Bolton talked about that we've kind of known about all along, and that, you know, that Trump was willing to sell out the interests of the United States in order to get Chinese to help him on re-election. He implored them to buy $200 million worth of farm products, mainly soybeans. Of course, the reason that they'd stop buying the soybeans was because they were retaliating for Trump's tariffs. You know, so he created a situation without thinking it through, and then he tried to remedy it by getting the Chinese to do things for him personally rather than for the country. This has been going on all along. I mean, you know, Ivanka getting those.
By the way, when they wouldn't do it, he just had the Congress pass an appropriation in which he gave those same farmers some, up to 70%, of what they lost because of the Chinese not buying soybeans.
Yeah.
So he used both the Congress for himself, and he tried to use the Chinese for himself.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It goes on and on and on. And there were other things that Bolton put in his book about North Korea and the way Putin was able to play Trump and this or that. And, you know, Trump's MO is always that when someone says something bad about you, you hit back at them and you call them a liar or a fool or know nothing or whatever. And of course, these things are piling up on him because he's now had to call Jeff Sessions that, his first attorney general. He's had to call Mattis that, his first defense secretary, John Kelly, who was his chief of staff, and all this stuff. So one of the reporters asked the press secretary, how come he keeps hiring all these people who have all these defects? And the best answer that anybody could come up with was Mick Mulvaney's response on CNN this week, when he said, well, if Trump has a fault, it's that he doesn't always pick the right people, which I'm sure he's going to take a lot of heat from the president.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that Trump used to crow about, used to boast about. Everybody who's good wants to work for me. I will bring in the best people. Remember he used to say that? I will bring in the best people.
I only hire the best people.
Only hire the best people. Well, what's to be said? Well, with all of these failures, it's no surprise that the Trump campaign is falling back more and more on Joseph Goebbels and Nazi, strict Nazi propaganda, because Goebbels and the Nazis showed, for a few years anyway, that their kind of propaganda works. So he talks in nice terms about the SS, those murderous genocidal creatures. He talked in wonderful terms about Henry Ford, one of the great financiers of racism in the world, not only in America. And this week, he put out an ad in which he featured, Trump did, the Nazi symbol for socialists and communists in concentration camps, and attacked the protesters against American racism as worthy of carrying that concentration camp symbol. It's interesting. It's a staggering record.
Well, that was even too much for Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg, and they actually took that one down. Of course, Trump's people always complain that they're suppressing good information about Trump, that the liberals only do that, when in fact Trump is the one that's doing the one that's suppressing information and what have you.
I don't even think Trump has to suppress the information for the Republicans. You remember we talked about this, about the Republican state leadership throughout the country who believe firmly that they're sitting on the cusp of a landslide victory, right?
Right, right. This is whether they've been drinking the Kool-Aid or the hydrochloroquine or the Lysol or whatever they're drinking. But they've been, they live in this information bubble. And the question is whether or not they really truly believe what they're saying, or whether they're just saying it. And more and more, it appears that they really believe this stuff, that they don't have any contrary source of information, that they've completely forgotten, willingly or just by happenstance, things that they were taught in civics, if they were ever taught anything in civics. And, but the polling is, the Fox poll came out this week and showed Biden had gone from 8 points up to 12 points up. And most of this is that Trump is losing support. His favorables and his people who are willing to vote for him again, remember he said, what do you have to lose? And now people are seeing what they have to lose.
Yeah, the jobs and their lives.
Their jobs and their lives, of course. And their pre-existing notions of what was fair and what wasn't fair, in America, and that's more and more we're going to see this. We're going to see how desperate Trump gets with his rally in Tulsa, and how many people get sick for that rally. These are true believers. These are folks who, it's not just people from Oklahoma that are going to be there. It's going to be people from all over the country who are going to go back. They're going to be in a tight space. They're going to show their independence and freedom and liberty, as they call it, by not wearing masks and exposing themselves to a virus that in Oklahoma and in all these other states is out of control.
The pretense of these rallies that he holds, the pretense is that this shows his overwhelming local support. But the truth is that all of these rallies, the audience at them comes from all over the place. They make a conscious attempt to bus in their supporters from wherever they can get them to build up the audience at the rally. Now, there's no doubt there's a lot of people in Tulsa that would vote for Trump. But there's also no doubt that the people at this rally, many of them, maybe the majority of them, drove in from surrounding states and some from very far away. Didn't you tell me about one woman who said that this was going to be the 19th rally that she attended?
Yeah, I heard her I either read about her or I heard her on television. Yeah. And I think some people even coming, well, some people wanted to come down from Canada. They can't get in the country.
The right wing always used to attack genuine local demonstrations, and they used to say, well, these are not local people. These are outside agitators who've come here for this demonstration. But the truth of the matter is that almost never happens with left-wing demonstrations. Yeah. Almost all the time. But look, the demonstrations in Charlottesville, they weren't Those people weren't from Charlottesville. Most of them came from outside. Those Nazis came from outside of Charlottesville. And it's the same thing here in Tulsa. It's like a Potemkin village. It's a made-up image of a local demonstration, not truly a local demonstration.
Well, but part of what's going to happen when you get all these people is that they're going to go back to their individual states, and a lot of these states are now in play with the U.S. Senate.
A lot of these states are in play with the coronavirus.
Yeah, they are. They are. But you see numbers around the country. The Cook report just named Montana as a toss-up, where Steve Bullock, who ran for president for 15 minutes or so, went back. He's the former governor, and there's going to be a close race there.
And Montana's always a close race.
Yeah.
And it's Montana's usually decided by the Native American vote.
Yeah.
So if you got a guy like Bullock who has a big base of personal support, you got a chance.
Mm-hmm. And other places, Colorado, Susan Collins continues to be in deep trouble where she is. They keep trying to pin her down. She expresses her concern very well, but when push comes to shove, she's not usually there to be found. I always called her a moderate of convenience. And
a person who's not a moderate of convenience is your friend Matt Cartwright, and he's got some interesting news this week, right?
Yeah, well, he's a pretty moderate in terms of his temperament and his common sense and things like that. He's had a target on his back for a while, and it'll be a shame to lose him. He seems fairly confident that he's going to be reelected. The Republicans want to put money into, or are supposed to put money into his race. They haven't right now. They did in the winter. They put money in to run ads to try to soften him up, and it doesn't seem to have moved the polling any. Now he's got an actual opponent, Jim Bognet from Hazleton, and Bognet's going to have to find out. He got the support of Donald Trump Jr., but still hasn't gotten any money yet. And Cartwright's in a very interesting position because he's moving up, and if he wins re-election, he will become one of the 12 Appropriation Committee subcommittee chairmen. And that his committee that he's beyond is Commerce, which oversees economic development, so he could channel a lot of money here, and also Science, the National Oceanographic and Aeronautics Administration, NOAA, and the Weathers. And also the Justice Department. He does the preliminary work on their funding. And with Bill Barr, it'll be interesting if he gets or when he gets to call Bill Barr before him and question him on certain things.
And apropos of him being reelected, it was very interesting that the votes from home, the mail votes, in the last primary just a few weeks ago, the statistics are fascinating, right?
Yeah, 70% of those who voted Democratic in Lackawanna County voted from home, and 83% of those in Luzerne County who voted Democratic voted from home, which was really, really shocking numbers. But it shows that people who want to vote are willing to go through this. We still have to improve our home the way of tabulating things. Philadelphia had a terrible process on tabulation. The best county in Pennsylvania was Allegheny, who got their numbers right in and right away.
All right, never mind about right in and right away. Right now, we're right at the end of time. So next week, we'll be in a position to comment on the Tulsa rally, if there's something to comment on, about the continuing turmoil in the Justice Department, and God knows what will come up, since what happens on Monday is usually old, stale, and forgotten by Friday with Donald Trump.
Yeah, but we want to wish everyone a happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day. Happy Hallmark holiday. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.